Right. Okay, so I gave this talk maybe 3 or 4 years ago, but Vern asked me to write it and I prepared it too quickly. And since then, the system has solidified to something that we've used to detect gravitational waves with. And I understand the system better, and Evan Hall wrote a thesis on it, so there's a lot more data gathered about it. So I wanted to give an update on the diagram and the walk through it. Let me maximize it here. Okay, so the primer in this case is that, again, the CARM and ALS system, the development for it has spanned many decades. The system in its infancy was present during the initial LIGO detectors, and some of the parts are even still from the initial LIGO detectors. And it was designed by many people, and it actually spans many subsystems from PSL to IOO to ISC to systems. So the documentation isn't always consistent, and it's tough to find a big picture with everything in one place, so this is my attempt to do so. I'm still getting to know the subsystem as it changes, so the presentation is not going to be perfect. In the DCC file card, there's a bunch of related documents that I tried to put together. So if you get curious after this, you can dig down into those. And this will be a course that I teach over the next 2 days, an hour today and an hour tomorrow. And thank you again for those who are willing to change at the last minute for the 12:30. So let's dive right in. So the basic thing we're trying to do here is to get a laser locked to a Fabry Perot cavity. And this is a resonant cavity where you have a partially transmissive mirror and a highly reflective mirror. And the idea is that you capture the electric field coming off of, reflected off of the partially reflected mirror, as shown in the top here. And of course, a photodiode doesn't measure electric field, it measures the power. So you're actually getting the square of the electric field on that photodetector. But that light there, that reflected light, encodes information about the frequency that the cavity likes. It encodes information about what the length of the cavity is. And the idea of a resonant cavity is that the cavity length is integer multiples of the wavelength of the laser that you shine into it. And this is generic for any color laser, any mirror cavity, anything. That's what it means to be resonant. And the plot there that's on the lower left shows what kind of resonance conditions you can have. And this is showing the reflected power as measured by this photodiode as you are changing the length of the cavity or changing the frequency of the laser. And you can see that when the cavity is resonant, and that's a 2 pi n there at the bottom in the middle of the graph, all of the reflected power drops to zero because it's all inside the cavity, bouncing around inside the cavity. And depending on how reflective that input mirror is, and also a little bit of how reflective the end mirror is, you can get what's called a low finesse cavity or a high finesse cavity, or a low quality factor cavity, or a high quality power cavity. So the more transmissive the input optic is, then the lower the finesse is, and the less light gets stored in the cavity. So store those terms in your brain, because it's gonna be important for what we're doing here. And then the other terms here, the free spectral range you might have heard of before, and that is, you know, either the integer multiple of length of the cavity that you need to span in order to get to another end resonance condition, or it's the laser frequency that you need to change in order to get to another resonance condition. And remember, frequency is related to wavelength by the speed of light. And then there's an equation in the bottom corner there that shows how the change in length is related to the change in frequency inside the cavity by the speed of light times the length of the cavity divided by the wavelength. So that's the basics. That's essentially everything that we are doing with the CARM and ALS system. We are trying to match a laser frequency to a cavity length. And how do we use that sensed signal as a control signal? We use Pound Driver Hall blocking mechanism, or PDH. So you see now, coming off of that photodiode, the electrical signal from the photodiode is fed into a mixer that is mixing in an oscillator. So we have some sort of phase frequency modulator of some sort that we can send a voltage into that adds sidebands or additional frequencies to the laser, such that some of the carrier or the main laser light frequency is resonant in the cavity and the sidebands are not resonant inside the cavity. So the information is now encoded on the sidebands. So we take that information and you delay it a little bit because it has taken the light a little bit of time to circulate in that cavity. There's some light travel time between the end mirror and the input mirror. So you need to match the phase of your local oscillator that you originally stuck in with a delay of the arm cavity and then mix it into your photodetector signal. And that multiplication of the signal then turns this radio frequency oscillator signal into an audio band signal. It's demodulating is the name for the process. And then you take that low frequency signal and you low pass it to get rid of all of the other high frequency crap that you don't want. And then that becomes your error signal for your control system. So that is then fed into a control filter. And then your actuator, in this case, to change the frequency of the laser to change the frequency of the light is the laser itself. So the plot here on the left, and maybe I should say the laser, the reason why that can control the frequency is that a laser itself is actually a resonant cavity. So you can either change the length of that mini resonant cavity inside the laser, or you can change the temperature of the laser. So you'll hear throughout this talk, you'll hear fast and slow. That's just referring to the speed of the actuator. So the PZT inside the laser that's controlling the mini cavity length is usually the fast control mechanism. And then the slow control mechanism is the temperature of that cavity inside the laser. So the plot, the three subplots that you see on the lower right, you've seen the reflected power. You know that it dips on resonance because all the light is inside the cavity. But if you take a look at the phase associated with that, then there's this quick wraparound zero. And this is actually a very good error signal because it is fast moving around where you think you want to be. And it turns out this PDH error signal, this demodulated mixer output, does kind of the same thing as you sweep through the frequency of the cavity or the laser. So that's what this lowest plot down there is this PDH error signal that we're using. And the important thing to note here is that this error signal is completely nonlinear in regions outside of the cavity line width. And that's one term that I forgot to mention in the first slide. The width of the dip and the reflected power is called the cavity line width. And the cavity line width is related to the free spectral range, is related to the finesse. All of these things are calculable and intermingled, which is why people loosely refer to them all kind of in the same way. So the this error signal, this PDH mechanism thing doesn't work until you get close to resonance. But once you do, it's a very nice, clean, fast changing linear signal right around zero. Okay, on to slide five. So this is a little bit more on PDH. The purpose of the PDH is essentially to reduce the frequency noise going into your cavity, right? If we're trying to measure the length of the cavity and the frequency of the laser is moving around, then it's going to confuse the estimates of what the length of the cavity is. And these two equations on the bottom are the intermingling of how you compute change in frequency and turn it into a change in length. Essentially, the message here is that they're sort of intermingled. They're essentially the same thing and related to each other by a few constants, like the length of the cavity and the frequency. The other important thing to take away from this is that the longer the cavity that you have, or the smaller the length changes, the better the frequency noise is. The lower the frequency noise is, the better the reference. So what we'll find in LIGO is that our struggle is to get from small cavities to bigger cavities to very long cavities to eventually getting the laser to match the arm cavity. And it's all because arm cavities are these ultimate 4 kilometer reference for really good frequency noise. Okay, on to slide six. So this is the arm cavity problem that we have here at LIGO. So we have a laser frequency. This is at, you know, essentially 0 hertz. So at DC, 1064 times the speed of light gets you, or divided by the speed of light gets you 3 terahertz. And for a standard neodymium YAG frequency noise, in our most sensitive band between 10 and 100 hertz, that has a frequency noise of about 10,000 hertz per root hertz. However, what you can ask the detector to do, if you take the sensitivity of the detector, just the advanced LIGO fundamental limited noise curve, and then you back out what frequency noise and what frequency stabilization you need in order to achieve that sensitivity, in the 10 to 100 hertz band, that's at 10 to the minus 6. So that means we need to suppress the frequency noise by 10 orders of magnitude. And the challenge in doing that is on the right side of this plot is that the end test masses, because we want, the end test masses and the IPA test masses, because we want to store light in the cavity as long as possible, we want it to interact with gravitational waves as long as possible, the mirrors are highly reflective and they have a long light storage time, which means they have a high finesse. This is great for gravitational wave detections, but it means it's very difficult to catch that resonance condition. It's very difficult to get that PDH error signal close enough to resonance such that it becomes linear. And this full width half maximum, or the cavity line width, is only about 100 hertz. And that translates to this about 1 nanometer. So this is a very high finesse cavity, which means it's difficult to get the PDH system linear enough that you can get there. And this was the whole reason for inventing the arm length stabilization servo, the ALS system. And the other challenge is that there are 5 length degrees of freedom here, not just the differential arm length, but it's the common arm length, it's the power cycling cavity, the Mitch circle. And in order to get all of them simultaneously resonant, it's a big challenge. Feel free to stop me at any point and ask questions if you have any. But slide 7 shows that LIGO is essentially PDH to the max. It's 6 nested interconnected PDH loops, all in order to control the laser frequency so that the laser frequency noise is reduced by that factor, that 10 order of the magnitude. So the goal by the end of this presentation is that you understand this diagram and understand how it relates to frequency suppression. And then just so you have the steps that maybe you can start to connect synapses, those nested loops are the FSS, which is the frequency stabilization servo, the IMC PDH, the input mode cleaner boundary Verhaal loop, the fiber PLL, that's the phase locking loop for the ALS system. Again, ALS is arm length stabilization, and it has a PDH loop. And there's also this ALS COM, which is the common arm of motion for ALS. And then finally, that gets handed off eventually to CARM, which is the red control of the common arm cavities. Okay, so let's take a brief aside and talk about what exists out there, or what we typically use in order to control the frequency of light. As in, what are our actuators on light? So on the left-hand side, we have an acousto-optic modulator, an AOM. And these things are Bragg crystals that are acoustically excited by a PZT, which we drive with a voltage. And on the bottom left diagram there on page 8, the laser light is coming in from the left, and then you can kind of see the diagrammatic lattices of the Bragg crystal. And as it passes through that, the light will be scattered and diffracted into many integer multiples at some angles away from the original incident light. So the diffracted light frequency turns out to be the frequency of the original laser shifted to f times the integer multiple away that you gather times that modulation frequency, or capital F. okay, so that, and the idea is that if you need to change the frequency of the light, then you pick off one of these diffracted light beams, and therefore your modulation frequency will define what your new frequency of your laser will be if you choose that another harmonic of this thing. Okay, on the right side is an electro-optic modulator, and this is a crystal that creates sidebands via phase modulation through this thing called the Pockels effect. And the idea is that the refractive index of this crystal is a function of the electric field passing through. So the output phase of the light is proportional to how much time that it spends in the crystal. And if you change the electric field in, say, a fast oscillatory manner, then you're changing the refractive index, which then changes the phase of the light. And there's it shown diagrammatically there. And then a little bit of math. So the idea is that any sine wave can be interpreted as an amplitude times an exponential of an imaginary times the frequency times the time that it spends, a e to the I omega t. And if you add this oscillatory frequency, you're changing the phase of the light. So now, apologies, I've changed the modulation frequency to be capital W here. I've changed from frequency space to radians. But the idea is that you have an amplitude here shown as capital gamma, often called the modulation index. That's the amplitude of the sine wave that you put in. And then the capital W is the modulation. And then there's some math approximation. It's a Taylor series expansion that says that that first equation is approximately equal to the original sine wave that you put in, plus another sine wave that contains this modulated index. And that approximation works for small gamma. And then you can manipulate that with a couple of other math identities to show that it ends up having two sidebands. At the bottom, you have the original carrier frequency at I omega t, and then you have added two sidebands on top of this at half the modulation depth times the original amplitude, and then the frequency is now little w plus capital W. So these are now original terahertz plus the few megahertz frequency that you originally have in your oscillator. This is what it means to have sidebands on the light. Okay, any questions? Okay, moving on to slide 9. So let's start with the first smallest loop, the frequency stabilization servo, or FSS. And you can see it diagrammatically represented in the middle there. You have the PSL laser, and then there's a pickoff from that PSL. And that is fed through an AOM, which you now know is an acousto-optic modulator. And you can see that I've diagrammatically taken a beam that comes from the angle. It's actually the first harmonic of the AOM. And we're driving that AOM with an 80 hertz oscillation frequency. And so one pass through the AOM gets you your original carrier frequency plus 80 megahertz. And then we put a little mirror at that transmitted light and reflect it back through the AOM to get a second pass. So what comes out of the AOM going back towards that little beam splitter there is 160 megahertz plus the original 3 terahertz of the carrier frequency. So this is now a totally new carrier frequency. And then that is then reflected through the same beam splitter. And then we then use an EOM to add 21.5 megahertz sidebands. And the purpose of the sidebands is to then do reflection pH locking on the reference cavity that you see there. So this reference cavity is a half a meter long. It sits inside a vacuum can. It's in the PSL. And this is our stable frequency reference that we start all of our frequency locking to. So the reflected field from that reference cavity, which is now going vertically, gets picked off by an RF photodiode, then mixed with a 21 megahertz oscillator that's been delayed a little bit. And then the demodulated frequency of that gets fed into that red triangle. And I don't show it diagrammatically here, but there is a fast and a slow path. And again, the laser temperature is controlled and the cavity length inside the laser is controlled. So all of this is to, now we have a better stabilized laser frequency. It's still the same original 3 terahertz, but it's been reduced in frequency noise going out to the infrared. I'll note that the oscillator going into the AOM is passed through a voltage controlled oscillator, a VCO, and this provides an adjustable oscillator so that the frequency that we spit into the AOM is 80 megahertz plus or minus 1 megahertz. So we just send a voltage independent from the original oscillator frequency, you send a voltage into that VCO and you can move that 80 megahertz around. And that changes the carrier frequency.
So where's the 71 coming from?
So the 71 is just some crystal in the CER that is a Wenzel crystal oscillator that you just buy off the shelf, and you say, I want this thing to produce 71 megahertz. And it's just an off the shelf product that, that produces that.
Okay.
And same thing with the 21.5. Everywhere where you see this circle with a little squiggle in it, that's going to be some pre-generated oscillator frequency that is just an off the shelf product that, that produces that. And those oscillators are typically synchronized to the timing system. The timing system that provides the oscillator frequency. That's a whole other talk. But for now, just consider these magical oscillators that produce a voltage that's synchronized to those frequencies. Okay, on to slide 10. So now we have a frequency stabilized laser. And that goes into the backup system. And it first hits the mode cleaner. And the mode cleaner itself is just another fancy PDH. So now instead of stabilizing to a half a meter cavity, we are that is you know mostly just acoustically isolated, sitting on the PSL table, we are now going to stabilize to a 16 meter cavity. That is triply suspended sitting on ISIs in a vacuum system. So this is a really stable frequency reference. And just the same with the reference cavity loop, we take the reflected light, MC REFL as you know it, off of MC1, and that gets steered out of the vacuum system, sent to a photodiode, MC REFL. And that gets mixed with now a 24 megahertz oscillator. And that frequency is shoved onto the light as it comes off of the PSL table. So there's another EOM on the PSL table. And this is going to become a very important EOM because it contains the oscillator frequency for essentially all of the cavities. But so you now have 20 megahertz sidebands on the light going into the mode cleaner. And the reflected light from that is mixed with another delayed oscillator. And then that error signal, which is an all in analog at this point, and I should have mentioned that with the FSS, this, the little red triangle there and this forked box called IMC board in this diagram, those are electronics boards that are all analog electronics. So the demodulated signal from MC REFL gets fed into one of the input ports of what we will now refer to as common mode boards. This is Daniel Eves now. So these common mode boards are all identical, and we'll use them a whole bunch all over the interferometer. But here in this case, we are just using it to take the IMC. And the first little triangle inside that board is a control filter, typically some kilohertz worth of low pass filter. And then that error signal is split in the fast and slow paths. And now here's the interesting part. This is where the loops become nested. So the fast path actually goes, and the fast signal is controlled and sent to the VCO that's driving the AOM, that's controlling the carrier frequency for the FSF. So we're now essentially demanding that the FSS is controlled by the length of the mode. And the slow path, and the reason why there's a fast and a slow path here is that I said that the VCO only has a plus or minus 1 megahertz range, but it turns out the low frequency end, the microcism between ham two and ham three, is big enough that it turns out to be larger than a megahertz. So we need to somehow directly suppress the cavity length. Because we don't have enough range with that VCO on the FSS. So there's a slow path that comes out at the top of this common mode board, and we actually digitize that, get it into an ADC, and then there's another control filter that then goes out to a DAC and then changes the mode cleaner length. So you have a fast and slow path, just like you did for the laser temperature and PDT. It's just another fabric grow cavity, but it's just, it turns out that the output is actually controlling the laser frequency in a nested sort of way. On to slide 11. Meanwhile, there's lots of other stuff going on. So we need to start prepping the arms for merging with the corner station in bed. To do this, oh, and I forgot to mention, back on slide 9, in the upper left corner, this is like a sort of status wheel of where we are on the lock acquisition process. So I have FSS highlighted here in this slide, but you can see the next couple of steps coming up. And so when you review this slideshow on your own digitally later, you can see that this wheel is sort of spinning through the lock acquisition steps, trying to let you know where you are in the lock acquisition steps. Okay, so I'm back on slide 11, and you can see that upper left thing here shows you're on fiber PLL. So here, we take the transmitted light from the reference cavity, and remember that this transmitted light is shifted by 160 megahertz from the AOF. But we want to get the light back down to the original carrier frequency of 3 terahertz. And so there's another fiber AOM that has a pickoff of the 80 megahertz, multiplies it by 2. I think it's called a duplexer or something like that, Ed. What's the thing that doubles the oscillator frequencies?
I'm not sure what it's called.
It's a frequency doubler, maybe, even. But anyway, it's another piece of analog electronics, and that feeds into a box that we then send the laser light into a fiber. And then that box brings the carrier frequency back down to 0. And then it's shipped from the corner station to an end station via optical fiber. And waiting at the end station is another PDH system. So here, instead of a VCO, we have a phase frequency discriminator, or a PFD. And that at the end station now is essentially a mixer. It's, I'm never really clear as to why this needs a phase frequency discriminator versus a just a standard demodulator port. But you can imagine it essentially as a demodulator, a mixer that's mixing this now 40 megahertz with the with the PDH signal that's coming out of the fiber. Oops. And then that signal is fed to another common mode board. So schematically, it looks identical. Just one of the inputs is now the demodulated signal from the beat note at the end station. And that gets fed to an independent laser, the Mephisto laser at the end stations on ISCT, EX, and EY. And then in this case, the slow path is fed to the temperature of the laser via Beckhoff as opposed to a fast ADC. And then the fast path, again, controls the PDT inside the laser. But this laser is different because this laser has two frequencies spitting out. It actually has a an SHG inside of it. So it spits out both green and red light. SHG is a second harmonic generator. And it spits out both lights. So the red output is then sent over to the beam splitter where the fiber comes in. And you then beat this 40 megahertz against the 0 carrier. And that's your beat note. So this is the error signal, the beat note between your laser and what's coming from the end station. So in this way, you are synchronizing the phase of this X-arm laser, as shown here, to the corner station. But it's pretty noisy. The fiber along there has a lot of phase noise associated with it. So there's this isn't nearly good enough to lock the arms. So there's many more steps that we need to do. But this is the first step of getting the green system up and running, the arm length stabilization servo.
Hey, Jeff, stepping back, what's the slow channel feeding into with that laser down at the end station?
There's a slow ADC, so that's a Beckhoff ADC. And then inside the Beckhoff, it sends off another control signal, and that directly hooks up to the temperature of the laser. So just like the corner station laser, you're changing the temperature of the laser, which changes the length of the cavity inside that laser.
Cool. Thank you.
Some other details, we choose plus 40 megahertz for the Y arm and minus 40 megahertz for the X arm. And that'll become important later when we start to combine the beams, the green beams in the corner. I'll just file that away for later. Okay, so I'm on to slide 12 now. And here is the next step in the lock acquisition sequence. This is ALS PDH. So these are, again, just fancy PDH loops. But now it's going to be nested with the fiber PLL, just like the IMC was nested with the FSS. So the reflected light, first you see that there's another ALN that's in between the laser and what goes into the vacuum system. And that ALN is 24 megahertz. And then that gets sent in via the transmon to the back of the ETM. And the reflected light from that gets picked off with the REFL, the arm REFL photodiode, and then demodulated again with a delay from the oscillator. And that gets fed into yet another common mode board. You can tell that Danielle constructed this system because this board is copied and pasted in every single place. And then the fast path now goes to the VCO, again, just like what happened with the input mode cleaner. So the fast path goes to the VCO, and the slow path goes to an ADC, which then has a slow control loop that then gets spit out from a DAC and actually pushes on the ETMs. This is what the slow feedback is when you're using ALS and you say, you know, go to ETM no slow or ETM slow with woofs. The slow part of that is you're engaging the actual test mass control on the slow path of this PDH loop.
To physically change the length.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't even want to use this.
And it's the same thing with the FSS. It's a matter of the range of the VCO. If the arms are quiet enough, then you don't need to use this slope. Okay. Questions on that? All right, moving on to slide 13. And for the record, our goal is to get to DRMI today, and then we'll break there and then transition after that. Okay, so PSL, common arm length stabilization. So now, what do we have? We have the frequency stabilization servo controlling the laser frequency, which is then modified by the mode cleaner. And we have the end station green. It's synchronized to the corner station, but it's still pretty noisy because the error signal came from this 4 kilometer fiber. And we have a probe of the cavity lengths for the arms with the arm PDH. And we are controlling them, but it's still not good enough. And one thing that I forgot to mention is that the ETMs are coated to be dichroic. They are coated to be reflective in green and red. However, remember this buzzword term from the beginning of the presentation, the finesse of the arm cavities in green is actually much lower than the arm cavity finesse in red. That 1 nanometer line width that I was saying for red, which was 100 hertz equivalent frequency, the equivalent frequency in green is something like a megahertz, or maybe tens of thousands of hertz. So it's actually much easier to lock the arms on green than it is on red. That's actually why we made the green coatings less reflective, is so that we could, just from the swinging around of the ISIs and the quads, it would be quiet enough that you could get a probe of the arm lengths in green. So now we want to get those probes of the X and Y arms. So we have the X arm locked on PDH, we have the Y arm locked on PDH, the mode cleaner is up and running and locked, the FSS is up and running on lock. So now we take a pick off of the X arm transmitted in green. And it takes a convoluted path to get off into ISCT1. It goes through the beam splitter, reflects off of PR3, transmits through PR2. There's a couple of fixed aspects on HAM3 that shoots all the way down into HAM1, sneaking through MC1 and MC3. To eventually get reflected out of the vacuum chamber on the ISCT1, where it is then compared with a frequency doubled version of PSL. So there's another second harmonic generator, or SHG. And so now you have the frequency doubled green light, which is 2 times the frequency of red, beat against the 40 megahertz that you get. Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention, 40 megahertz in red is 80 megahertz in green, right? Frequency double. Mm-hmm. So it's actually 80 megahertz coming out in green at the corner station. So you have the beat note against essentially megahertz, and that beat note there is captured on a photodiode, sent through a mixer, and then sent up into yet another CARM common mode board. The directionality is a little bit confusing there, but you send the beat note from the photodiode into a PFD that's mixing it down to low frequency. There's another PLL, so this is the COM PLL that you've heard of so much. And then the output of that PLL goes fed into a VCO, and then there's another frequency difference divider. I think that's what I was trying to think of, the FDD. That's what gets the frequency back into this 80 megahertz that you want. So there's just a little frequency control servo inside there. But that's the idea, is that you have, again, it's just another glorified PDH loop. You have an arm cavity length that you've probed with the XN, with the X arm green. It's beat against the PSL frequency to nest it with the PSL to get these things more synchronized. And then it gets plopped onto a photodiode, mixed with an oscillator, and then the control signal gets fed into yet another common mode board. Now here, the interesting thing is that we're still using the mode cleaner, but we've now switched the slow control from using the MC REFL to using the COM beat note. So you can see there in the upper part of the diagram, the slow output of the CARM board gets digitized into the ADC, and then now digitally there's a switch that's been flipped over. And so now it is actually being controlled. The length of the mode cleaner is being controlled by ALS COM. So this way you can start to use the arms to control the mode cleaner length, which then controls the FSS, which then controls the laser frequency. So these things are starting to get really nested. and interacting with each other. But again, the whole point is to get the arms to be controlling the laser frequency, because the arms are this amazing 4 kilometer reference. So they're now all stuck together and muddled. You'll also hear this term that Danielle throws around called an additive offset, because you're adding the arm offset, the slow requested offset to the laser frequency, and you're literally changing the carrier frequency because you have this AOM in back. Okay, so that's slide 13, and that's COM servo. And now we get the diff servo going. So we bring in the Y-arm reflected light. And again, it takes this convoluted path, bouncing from BR3 to BR through BR2, around M3, through the Mode Cleaner, and out onto the same table. And now you put in another beam splitter where you're combining now not the light from the PSL and your oscillator frequency needs to be, and you're mixing that with your oscillator, and you now have an error signal for diff. However, diff, it doesn't need to be controlled to nearly as high a bandwidth. We don't need nearly as much suppression. So that one we can actually digitize immediately and feed to the ETFs. So you can see in the middle left there, the diff signal is fed into an ADC. This little tag and flag as to where it goes to the end stations. It goes to that summation point in with the blue triangles there. And that gets summed in with the test mask control. And so you're now moving the ETM X and ETM Y as controlled by the slow output of diff and COM.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Beating up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to digress back to the comp.
Mm-hmm.
When we're doing arm alignment, we are to maximize the amplitude of the comp beat note.
Mm-hmm. So in
my mind, you know, in my musical mind, when I'm tuning something to
mm-hmm.
something else, I want to decrease the beat note because I want to bring them together. Why are we separating these by a larger amp?
No, so it's not that you're separating the beat notes by a hard amplitude. All you're doing there is you're aligning the beams so that they are overlapping better, right? So at this beam splitter here, you want everything to be aligned perfectly so that the beat note is loud. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that we're not bringing the two beams in tune with each other.
We're increasing the amplitude of the light on the photopipe. So they're gonna have whatever separation they have, right? That's gonna be your measure of the arm length.
We're not changing that.
But what you're doing is increasing the amount of RF signal on that photodiode, which is why it's a dB, or which is actually dBm, which is the relative to 1 watt of RF power.
Into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's what you're doing when you're increasing the COM beat note, is you're just moving optics around to get more light on that photodiode.
Oh, all right. So
And that's why when you do that, you're adjusting PR3.
Right.
Right. Because everything between PR3 and the two arms is all fixed optics.
Right.
Yeah. All right. That was slide 14. We now go on to slide 15, and here we have a measure of the arms at this point. We know exactly where we are, but the signal is relatively noisy. The frequency control is nowhere near good enough, and we don't have DRMI locked. So the entire rest of the lock acquisition sequence with respect to CARM, the whole point is to get DRMI locked independently and then slowly bring the arms in and then switch from high range, high noise actuators to low noise, low range actuators. Because we otherwise have a complete measure of the arm cavities. We just need to get their noise, their sensor noise, much much more reduced. Okay, so let's go. We're on ALS diff right now. Find IR. We are now steering around the COM and diff frequency control. So you're, there are Beckhoff DACs that are in that left middle part of the diagram. So you're adding, I have it labeled here as because we have control of the arm cavity. On the transponder. So you're steering around the frequency offset, which is then literally changing the length of the cavities and also the length, the laser, but because this is all slow stuff, this is all slow feedback fed to the test masses, you're changing the length of the cavities to find where the red would be resonant. On to slide 17, we have found the resonance. We have found some magical frequency for both COM and diff that makes the arms resonant in red, and we know what the carrier frequency is that we should have to operate the PSL, that it will resonate in for IR in the arms. We have found where the IR is, and then on slide 18, we intentionally push them off red. So now you can see in the bottom middle corner, the left middle corner there, we've added a delta. One's called offset, and then one's called FD with a lowercase delta. The reason they're different will become important later. One is the DARM offset. It's something that we intentionally keep in the laser system the entire time. But this offset in the COM servo, in the lower left part of the COM diagram, that's one we're going to be moving around and controlling whether the arms are on resonance or not. Okay, so the arms are off resonance. We've intentionally increased or decreased the length of the arm cavities so that they are intentionally not resonant in red. But we still have complete control in green and on COM and diff. On to slide 19. Here, in this step, we are bringing in DRMI. We use a temporary sensor, REFL Air. You can see that it's picked off from the back of PRM and another convoluted path. The dotted line will take you from that. So it comes from the back of PRM, hits IM4, hits IM3, gets skewed a little bit by the Faraday isolator, and then bounces off of IM2, and then gets reflected off of the off from HAM2 into HAM1, and then out of the vacuum system, again onto ISCT1, where there is, you guessed it, another photodiode for PDH locking. So this is REFL Air now. It's mixed with a modulator frequency, which you can see now the EOM has 9 megahertz and 45 megahertz added to it. And in the case of DRMI, we, because there are multiple cavities you need to control there, we demodulate at several of those frequencies. These are REFL 9, REFL 45, names that you've heard around. They're the signals that you're using. And that is digitized with an ADC. And then fed some of it into the common mode board to control the laser frequency. This is where the power is happening. And then some of it is fed to the beam splitter. You can see that half circle tag there is picked up at the bottom of the beam splitter. And then there's another DAC there that is picking up at the beam splitter. So you now see that PRM and the beam splitter, and what is not shown is the signal recycling cavity, because this diagram was confusing enough. The signal recycling cavity is also controlled. And now here is where we need to talk a little bit about 1F versus 3F. And because it's 11:58 and we've already spent an hour, I think I'm going to break here for questions, and then we can pick up tomorrow. Blinded the science.
So what are we using as a reference to phi and IR and say that we've found the resonance?
So I'm going to go back to slide 17 and, slide 16. And the statement at the bottom there is that whether the arms are resonant or not is measured by the red transmitted power on the QPDs on the platform. So this is the QPD sum. On the transform.
Okay.
This is the TRX, TRY signals.
Yep, exactly. Okay, any other questions? Corey, any questions?
I had a small one, but I could ask you later.
Back now.
The control we feed back to the beam splitter, am I missing how that's connected on that last slide?
Potentially, it's as best as I could. So you see there's a reflected light coming off of PRM in Repelair.
Yes.
And how it's demodulated and then fed into an ADC.
Yep.
So off of the right of that is a dotted line which goes into a semicircle.
Yeah.
And
yeah, where do you go?
That semicircle is picked up on the bottom part of the diagram where you see it going to PRM and the beam splitter.
And that's going to the beam splitter. Okay.
There's little control filters there in orange and purple. That's the DRMI control filters. And then there's the DACs for the two suspensions. Then gets fed to change the beam splitter position and the PRM.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's break there and pick this up at 12:30 tomorrow. 12:30 tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.